Hello, and welcome to Design Me a House. I am Dawn Oliveira, textile designer and educator, and with me today is my co-host,
Katie Hutcherson, architect, designer, author.
And today is episode 14 of season 2 of Design Me a House, and we are going to be chatting about being soul practitioners today, Katie.
Yeah, we're in the shop talk category. So whenever Dawn and I are doing one of these episodes, we look to see, like, which category are we behind on?
And Katie's always great at coming up with the categories.
And so, well, we realized that this one, for us, it's very simple for just the two of us to chat.
Yeah.
And this is a topic we both know very well.
Very well.
We are both soul practitioners, and a lot of people are sole proprietors. I just wanted to distinguish between. We are also
those. That would be a good thing. I was just reading up on all the differences between contractors and freelancers.
Okay. Yes. So, you know, we're both sole proprietors and sole practitioners. Dawn, can you just, since you've just apparently sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to your business entity, whether you call yourself a freelancer, an independent contractor, a self-employed person, or a sole practitioner, you're considered a sole proprietor by the IRS. So, and there are obviously benefits to opening your studio that way. It's simple. You just, like, no paperwork practically. You're a sole proprietor. You make all the decisions, you pay all the taxes, and you earn all the money from your sole practice, if indeed there is that to collect. So yeah, it's just much simpler than any other kind of business entity, and we can get into a little bit of that if you want, Katie. If you're a sole proprietor and you're doing, you know, you're going great guns, you can change your business to an LLC, and that protects you from legal liabilities, like creditors come after you for some reason, they won't take any of your personal assets, they'll take your business. So I've never been an LLC,
but I
will say that all the years I was in New York, 23 years, I was a corporation.
Oh.
And I did that because I was advised to do that. And I'm glad I did because, you know, I earned quite a bit of money in New York all those years. But the downside is you pay your accountant a heck of a lot more money because you're filing two returns, a corporate return and a personal return.
Interesting.
And you're paying two sets of taxes.
Okay.
So it was a little rough, but if you're earning enough, it pays off.
Right, right.
When, like you, I'm an artist. You're an artist architect. When I started my Oliveira textile business, I didn't even know how it was going to go. I had never manufactured before. So I just stayed sole proprietor.
Right.
And I am to this day.
Right. So I'm so glad one of us has done some research on this topic,
a little
Dawn,
bit.
Because
yeah.
I did not re-delve into this other than because I was thinking, yes, we're sole proprietors, and there are lots of different sole proprietors who have staff, but we
right.
are sole practitioners in that we are lone entities doing all the work. There is no full-time staff
right.
other than ourselves. So
right.
Lots of sole proprietors can have two or three or four or five employees, you know, whatever.
You can, yeah.
So for my purposes, because I'm a lone person in this mm-hmm. enterprise, and yes, I filed for business purposes. Yes, I file as a sole proprietor.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of my day-to-day life, since I know it's just me doing the business, you know, I'm a sole practitioner. That's just one way to distinguish myself from other, like, small firms in the field
right.
that I have selected. One thing you mentioned, LLC, again, neither Dawn or I are lawyers. So anyone listening to this, you know,
yes.
get your legal
Do your
advice.
Own research.
Yeah, don't talk to us about legal stuff, right? That's not our thing. But one thing I learned when I first went on my own, which was so long ago, I think that's why both of us are like, wait, what? You know, I started in 2002. So that's 20 years ago.
Right.
But I remember doing my research back then. And I was thinking that perhaps what I needed to be was an LLC. You did mention that. And one thing that I was advised, and again, everyone get your own advisor, was that as an architect, that wouldn't really protect me any more than being an architect itself. In other words, as an architect, I'm responsible for the same liability that I would be if I was an LLC.
Really?
So, yeah. So it, again, everyone get your own person. But so in my case, you know, you hear what you want to hear. So when I got that advice, I'm like, oh, well, isn't that convenient? Because I don't feel like being an LLC. So I did not become an LLC. But I know others who
are a lot alike, Katie, in that way.
Yeah. So I know others who are interior designers have opted for the LLC. Most architects don't, because I think it's an unnecessary, there's not an advantage. Again, look into it yourselves.
Yeah.
But what I thought we could talk about, because we both work independently, we don't have employees, mm-hmm. is some of the advantages for us of working that way.
Yeah.
Any disadvantages that there might be of working that way, and how, what's the advantage or disadvantage for the people who work with us, you know, not just from our point of view, but for our clients.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think, Dawn, you and I have a lot of overlap in the way that we work.
It's so surprising. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a fact. I mean, and it depends how busy each of us is and how our clients are affected. Because if we're overwhelmed suddenly with a ton of jobs, obviously the lead times are going to be longer. Clients are going to have to wait a little longer for finished projects.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say that's the obvious, one person is one person. So mm-hmm. When I'm taking work, when you're taking work, I'm sure you do the same thing, is I'm looking at my schedule. I'm looking at, you know, what's my current workload?
Right.
How might this particular project, you know, every project's different, obviously, and some of them are of different scope.
Right.
And in my case, sometimes different locations. And how would a project of this scope and this location fold into what I've currently got going? And there's a lot of anticipating, you know, I'm projecting often.
Right.
And also, I don't know necessarily which projects will really come to fruition. Maybe, Dawn, in your case, most people probably, once they contact you, they probably know, okay, yes, I do need these pillows or this chair done.
It's true, but I do also now, I try to give an estimate of cost.
Of course.
And if it's beyond their budget, they may opt out.
Okay. Yep.
Or they may cut back on the scope of the project.
Or come back later. They might say, I'm going to go save
right.
it. Yeah.
Right. But I do my best because I've been at this for so long, I can come pretty close and pretty accurately give them an estimate of cost.
Yeah. So for me, sometimes clients will, you know, a lot of times if the work is a renovation or addition, they might be considering, you know, is that current house they're in the one they want to stay in, right? And so do they want to do this project to make this, you know, kitchen family room or this master suite addition or whatever it is with the concept that they're going to be there for a while?
Right.
And they might be evaluating, you know, other properties, real estate, you know? So in some instances, someone will just go buy something. It's like, oh, there goes that project. You know, they went and bought something else or whatever, or they'll just put it on hold. They'll be like, oh, you know, we don't want to be inconvenienced by moving out right now. If we were to move out, we would need such and such accommodations and we can't line that up for X amount of time.
You have way more parameters to deal with.
Well, so there's a lot of projects come and go. Or they'll be like, oh my God, we're just, you know, one or the other of the couple, often it's a couple, will be like, I'm not ready to make the investment yet. And so they'll put it kind of on hold. Or like right now, with the market being kind of nutty right now, some of my jobs from a couple of years ago that were kind of in a wait and see mode in terms of their own lifestyle and their budget and blah, 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 have gone into like a, you know, we're going to wait until this craziness is over, like a really long.
Oh, really? So even longer wait.
So that can be awkward because I'll be totally booked and then they'll come back, you know, like a huge amount of time will have gone by.
Uh-huh.
And they'll come back and they'll be like, we're ready. And it's like, okay, so.
A little busy.
Yeah. So, and I would say right now in the home design, architecture, construction field right now, there's so much demand, and I'm sure you're hearing this. Everyone's aware of this.
Yes.
And there's so much demand that people are really, you know, knocking on all the doors.
Yeah.
And again, you and I as sole practitioners, you know, there's only so much work we can take on
right.
in any given year.
But the upside is we've both been at our respective occupations for so long that there is a reputation that we develop with our own particular skills. And I think if a client trusts that or has seen our work and really wants that aesthetic, they will wait, hopefully.
Well, yeah. And there's also the advantage because we aren't, I'm going to use, you know, someone else listening to this who has employees, I'm sure would think of this differently, but we're not pawning off our work on staff. You know, if someone is right. Reaching out to me because they want to work with me on a project, I'm not going to then hand that project off to someone else and then just periodically check in and see if it's on budget. You know what I mean? Like I'm full on totally invested. Like I know right. every detail of their project. And their sole point of contact, anything they ask me about their project, I should know because I've had my hand in on every aspect of their project.
Yes, as opposed
to, well, I don't know if so-and-so did that or said that or didn't do that or misunderstood or whatever.
Which larger firms deal with all the time.
Yes,
and
so I don't,
they have to because they take on so much work.
Yeah, so I don't have to represent someone else's work, you know, so it's my work. I'm very aware of it all. So, you know, it basically it's kind of like, I think Dawn, you use this to describe your work. It's like a boutique service. So
exactly.
if you're coming to me, you know, I'm all in.
I will say this, that when I was operating my DOT studio, Dawn Oliver Textiles Incorporated business in New York, it got to the point where I couldn't do all the work that I was being asked to do. I had a lot of clients and I did sub out. I hired independent contractors to take on projects. And it was terrifying for me at first because I had total control of every brush stroke at the time
right.
of my hand painting.
Right.
And then later CAD of every piece of artwork that we, you know, sent out the door. Luckily, I had wonderful artists who came to me through previous full-time jobs. I'd had one at Liz Claiborne, one at Ralph Lauren, and their skills were phenomenal and I didn't have to worry. It took a little while, but
right.
that was a godsend because yes. they needed the work.
Yeah.
I loved having them
yeah.
pick up the project and bring back this exquisite artwork. And, you know,
right.
it helped me because right. I was earning more.
Right.
And I paid them very well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's true. And of course, I also do the same thing. So we should make that clear to listeners.
Okay.
Yes. So when I, you know, there's so many variables
in these
projects and when something's going to turn on or turn down or turn up. And I, you know, need to keep things moving. So I do bring on, you know, what I'm going to call consulting colleagues. So I do have architect designer type colleagues who I freelance out to. So
I didn't know that. See?
Yeah, I do that occasionally. It's been wonderful when it happens, you know. So I do that depending on workflow. And I'm doing it right now. And it's generally the people that I've freelanced with, you know, had consult for me are people I've worked with in the past or know mm-hmm. their work from a previous either school or work experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, you know, they also tend to be friends of mine. So
yes.
it's usually, you know, it's been pretty great. It's been pretty helpful. Actually there was one instance where someone who I didn't know from a previous work or school situation. And it was someone who was an adult changing jobs, you know, moving into the design field. And that worked well, too. That was a little different just because I didn't know that person's previous level of experience the way I knew.
Yeah, that's a little tricky.
Yeah. And that did work out because, like, I was able to find something that I thought was, like, kind of a perfect match for that person. And it was a very good match for that person. So that worked out. So we do that, but that's it's not the same as having an employee.
Like, no, it's not at all. It's
yeah.
such a big responsibility to actually hire a full-time employee, pay benefits, all of that stuff. I just have never been in that position.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And to keep them busy. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah. So the amount of work I would have to constantly be seeking out and acquiring to keep that second person always mm-hmm. occupied would take away from my design time and the other work that I'm doing.
And I've done that with interns.
Yeah.
I've actually had interns from RISD and from UMass
yeah.
who were wonderful, really wonderful, but it took a lot of my time.
Right. Well, so it's your time to go get the extra work and then it's your time to supervise in that case.
To supervise.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I only do that when I absolutely need to, and I haven't done that in a while.
Right. But, right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting, Katie, because I think we both approach our businesses in the same way, and it's really as artists. And let's face it, all artists are sole proprietors, you know?
I mean,
you have to treat your studio as a business, obviously, if you want to sell your work, but you're a sole proprietor. You're an independent contractor. You're an artist. And you choose to work independently because that's your nature, because that's who you are. And to be creative sometimes requires solitude.
That's a really good point.
Right?
I think both of us, I did write like a list of what do I do, you know, as a... As a sole practitioner, I was just trying to think, well, what are my jobs, you know, that I do as the sole proprietor, sole practitioner at Katie Hutchison Studio as an architect designer? And like, what are the advantages? So, you know, the primary advantage, I feel, is the autonomy. I mean, I think, and to your point, like, you know, our personality types really appreciate that. So, that and when I was working in firms, they were always like, oh God, she wants all this autonomy. I'm like, yes, yes, I want this autonomy.
You want to be able to go away when you want to go away, if that's even possible.
You want to be in charge of yourself, right?
You know
that expression, you know, you're not the boss of me. You know?
You're not the boss of me. People are quiet quitting because they're sick of their bosses. You know, we get it. Katie, I remember standing in Penn Station, looking up this escalator at like 8:45 in the morning, the thousands of people going to full-time jobs. I was 22 and I stood there going, I will never be part of that rat race. I just could not envision myself in that world.
Well, I was, you know, most architects have to start off somewhere, you know, in the working world. And actually, in order to get your license, you have to satisfy these requirements. It's called the Intern Development Program. And you satisfy these requirements while an employee. You're working for an architecture firm. And they are giving you, hopefully, you're requesting, but hopefully you're getting these opportunities in the various arrays of the field to satisfy this intern development program, which you need to do prior to sitting for your licensing exams. I mean, at least that's the way it was set up when I started.
Okay.
I believe that's still the way it's set up. I mean, there's a lot of debate back when I was in this process of why aren't we like other programs where you get your degree, then you go sit for your exams to be a lawyer or, well, I guess it's different also now. I almost misstated there. I think that might be the case for becoming a lawyer, whereas in the medical field, you do have that whole internship, residency, all that stuff, which is a whole nother, I don't know how they handle that. Oh my goodness. So in our world, it's 3 years minimum, but that's if you're getting all the right opportunities to show that breadth of experience.
And you're talking about working full time for a company.
Yes, yes, yes.
As an intern?
Well, you're paid.
They call it that.
They call it an internship. It's a paid internship.
You're paid.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to be, I mean, right? So, yeah. I mean, we have to live. But you might have one of these, let's call it an internship that's paid, where you're only doing this one task over and over again, because that's what's convenient for the employer. They're like, oh, I need someone to sit here and draw these bathroom details till they're blind, you know? And so you will just be like bathroom detail queen. And that does not help you learn about the field. That doesn't give you the breadth of experience you need to be able to sit for the exams. So now again, people who are younger than myself, who are coming out now, this might have hopefully been improved since my day. But it could take way more than 3 years to fill these different categories. Uh-huh. You know, it might mean moving to different jobs so that you're not like pigeonholed into this one thing that's convenient for the employer, but not great for your professional development.
Wow.
So we do all generally, you know, not, I'm sure there are exceptions, but most people who are becoming architects start off working in various architecture firms. And the good thing about that is you see how they're set up. You see how they're functioning.
Of course.
You know, not
there's
only
there's a benefit to having, and I did work full time for a company very briefly in the fashion industry when I first got to New York. For me, we didn't have the benefit of, you know, working for companies and learning one skill at a time, if you can call that a benefit. It was trial by fire with thrown into the fashion industry. And like, here you go, start hanging up these garments that just shipped in from Korea and don't stop until they're all done. And then we'll talk about design.
But
it was good. You just learn everything.
Right.
You learn everything all at once.
And so I think part of the situation, when you first come out of architecture school, you have an architecture degree, but you really don't know anything, in terms of, you know, what's an architectural practice and how does it work. And so the people who hire you really are taking on a lot. I mean, they have to bring you into the real world, and you need to learn so much. And to your point, John, you do learn that on the job, but you need to start somewhere.
Sure.
So wherever you start, they're taking on a lot, you know? And now that I look at it a little bit from their point of view, like, you're totally green, you're totally willing and able, but you just have no experience, you know? So,
How long did you actually do those?
So in my case, I think I was an intern for much longer than 3 years. I mean, it could have been 8 years. I actually don't really remember.
Oh, okay.
I'd have to go back and think about it. I think for me, it was 7 years, 7 years.
Okay.
And that was also, as I think we've had descriptions before, of our tendency to not stay very long at these jobs. So I was moving around a lot. And so that was that was a really long 7 years.
Yeah. Maybe that was good for you though. Like you said, you learn different skills every time you move to a new position.
Well, you do, but it gets to the point where you're all right, I've seen this, right? I've seen how this works. I did have the benefit of at several of these gigs having really wonderful mentors above me. So not the person who hired me, not the boss.
Right.
But these were all kind of, not all of them, but they were either small to middle-sized firms that I was working at. And the person who I was reporting to in various gigs was very fantastic. So I had these wonderful mentors who just happened to be there, right? Like, you take the job, you know who the employer
is. Everything.
But you don't know who your coworkers are going to be.
Yeah.
And then you get in there, and I was just really fortunate that I had these phenomenal, you know, the coworkers, but they had way more, you know, experience than I did. Yeah, they were way above me. And bringing me kind of along. One of them I refer to as my architectural mentor in one of my books, who I met at, you know, one of my later gigs. And he was very, very senior. Mm-hmm. So he had his own practice, actually. And then due to a bunch of kind of financial concerns, it was during one of the many recessions, he took a gig with another architect who was using him as kind of a senior supervisor,
creative director.
Yeah, that wasn't the title, but you know, something kind of like that. Mm-hmm. So his name, this I'm referring to my friend Jeff Coper, who was my architectural mentor. And so he was brought on as, you know, kind of a senior guy to help us. And I happened to sit near him. These offices are so random, you know, and it was
serendipity.
It was kind of a small little maze of people. And I was near him and I was constantly tapping him on the shoulder. You know, what do I do with this? But what about that? What about this?
And he was patient.
He was so patient. And he would sketch these details, you know, just on graph paper. Communicate to me what I needed to be communicating in these drawings, you know, and he was just, you're right. He was so patient. And so then I ended up leaving that firm. He later, not long after I left, he also left. He wanted to be on his own again.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went out on his own again. And so once he was on his own again, then I was like, oh, awesome. You know, so I got in touch with him and I used to freelance for him.
Oh,
so
wow.
Yeah, and so that was fantastic because he was another sole practitioner, well, sole proprietor.
Right.
Did have like off and on one employee, and then I was like his regular freelancer. Mm-hmm. And so that was fantastic because I was on the phone with him, you know, all the time about these projects. And you know, he was in the leadership role and I was in the I'm behind the scenes role.
I gotcha.
When we go to meetings, which was interesting, a lot of employers that I've had before, if I went to a client meeting and they'd had me doing all the work,
yeah,
and then we go to the client meeting, often they would present, right? They would present like what I did.
Ah.
And you would sit there as if you're just taking notes on something you knew nothing about, right?
Oh, yeah. The dues we pay.
Yes. Baby. So, but when I was working with Jeff as his freelance consultant, we would go to these meetings where they had only met him. Like they'd hired Jeff.
Yeah.
And then I would go to the meeting and he'd be like, oh, here's Katie. And they'd be like, oh, you know, nice to meet you, underling, okay, note taker.
Very generous.
But then I would present. He'd be like, so Katie, why don't you present the, you know, the scheme? And the people would be like, wait, what? Like,
would you freak out or would you?
No, I mean, because I was like, awesome. And I would just like roll with it. But I think sometimes the people were like, wait, who is this woman? Like, you know, we hired Jeff. So that was always interesting. But he was so generous about that.
Yeah,
kind of stuff.
I really, that's rare. Let's face it, in the design
very
world,
rare,
because people want to take, you know, full credit for
totally,
a lot.
Totally. Yeah, he was. That's why I mentioned it by name, because he was above and beyond. Now, unfortunately, Jeff Coper passed away. So
I was just thinking maybe he'd be a great guest. But
oh, he would have been a phenomenal guest.
Yeah.
He used to give me the best advice, which was mainly for me to just tone it down. That was the summary of his advice to me. It was just like,
aesthetically or like
just the way I was always not aesthetically. Okay. I'd say in management style. He was just he's
interesting.
Like, just tone it down. He, not those words, but it
was this
like,
all Rhode Island? Was this
No. Okay. He was an architect on the Cape.
So
we did a lot of projects on Martha's Vineyard together. Yeah. So anyway,
now
here he was a wonderful mentor. Who am I mentoring, Dawn? I do wonder about that. You know,
you're saying that as if you maybe should be.
Yeah.
Mentoring
like,
somebody.
Like, yeah. Who am I mentoring?
Yeah, passing it on.
Right. Like he really taught me so much. I mean, so the one person I had freelance for me who was entering the field was like the only person I was really mentoring. These other people who are so wonderful to help me, you know, I'm not their mentor.
Right.
So I do wonder about that. You know, is there a role for that somehow, you know, in my future?
Maybe. I think that, you know, as we get older, we've been in these businesses for a long time. You kind of do want to pass on your skills. And that's why I taught for a little while.
Right, right.
It is rewarding to do that. It does require time away from your studio.
Right.
Or time in your studio teaching.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful thing to pass that on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping, maybe the podcast, someone's listening, you know, that's not the same as mentoring, but you know, there is information we're trying to convey and generally we're speaking to homeowners, right?
Like,
you know, but you know, this part of the program, the shop talk part, I think we're also speaking to other, you know, designers, architects, mm-hmm. who can kind of, relate, I guess, for lack of a better word. So I did write a list of all that we do. So
yeah, you started with autonomy.
Well, I mean that I autonomy is what we get. But in terms of the variety of job and tasks that we do, so I just kind of in no particular order, I wrote administrative, marketing/PR, web designer, content creator, business billing department, development, client relations, like we're front of the house, if you will.
Yes.
Client representative in terms of permitting hearings. I'm a permitting consultant, cost estimator. And I also a collaborator working with necessary consultants for architectural projects, which includes site engineers, structural engineers, furniture makers, millworkers, kitchen cabinet companies, vendors, contractors. And I'm a designer and an architect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
that's a wonderful thing you just did, making that list. I did not do that, but I have at least half of them.
Right? Yeah.
On my list.
I mean, I think the designer architect part in a way is the gravy of the job.
So true.
So like everyone, some people be like, what's the hardest part of your job? Not being the designer or the architect, right?
Yeah, right.
That's like when you finally get to do that, you're like, oh, what a great day. Like,
I today, know. And today, I follow enough Instagram designers and they all say the same thing. Like, oh, today I get to be in the studio, especially interior designers.
Yeah, yeah.
They're always on site somewhere.
Yeah. You know? Oh, so like the site part is fun. I mean, I have to say that the reason we chose to work the way that we're working is I enjoy doing all the different things, right? Oh. If I only wanted to do one thing, I would have set this up differently. Okay. But because I enjoy the variety, I don't get bored. You know, you can't get bored.
This is very true.
So there's so much to do. And it does mean for every job, you know every aspect of what I just said pertaining to that job.
Very true. I would gladly hand over bookkeeping to any individual.
I see that as, okay, now I'm going to go collect the candy. Like, I don't mind that part. It's like, I'm trick-or-treating now. And you know, I'm fine with that part. Also, you know, it also makes it very clear to my clients, they know what's happening. You know, I got to knock on some wood now. But I don't generally have, you know, issues with respect to that because it's all very clear what's been going on.
And, oh, I gotcha. You know,
it's all spelled out. And the main thing we get to do is we get to decide the vision for the practice. What is the practice?
Very
in
true.
In terms of the product, the design, the architecture, and what is the culture of the practice? This is all our vision for it.
And some of that I think is intuitive. It's who we are as people. Like, you design beautiful spaces. They're mostly contemporary kind of in aesthetic.
Not clean. Necessarily. Thank you.
I don't know. They're beautiful. They're unique. They're not like just a reno in any old house that just gets the same old thing. They're unique. They're beautifully thought through and designed.
Thank you.
I love them. I really do. So, yeah, we get to design that. And I think it's intuitive. I really enjoy designing more contemporary patterns than traditional patterns because I did so much traditional work when I was in the city because clients required that.
Right.
But now that I'm designing my own collection, I do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah. And so the great thing, Dawn, is also people can go to your website and click on your work, right?
Yes.
Your portfolio, or I'm not sure what word you use for it, but
yeah, it's a portfolio.
Your portfolio. And it's very clear. There's no wondering, what does Dawn do? What's Dawn's aesthetic? Here it is, right? It's very clear.
It is.
And I'm sure the people who hire you to do design work, right? Because you do some freelance work.
Freelance work, and that generally ends up being with clients that want a little more traditional work. I have the Photoshop skills to be able to render and complete pretty detailed, exquisite florals because I did so much of it. And so I do some of that as well. Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I'm sure the listeners who listen frequently know I'm constantly, I am the one pushing you to expand your business.
I know.
And you're like, I have enough, but I would love it if you did wallpaper. I got to say, I think
making a note, Katie.
I know I bring it up all the time, but
you're right.
Your patterns really lend themselves to, you know, the kind of, I think you call them hero graphics or whatever, like a wall of an enlarged, maybe even not necessarily a repeat. You know, I could take one of your squares.
Right, it could be just a placed image.
Yes, and just enlarge it across, you know, I can see on the wall.
I love that idea. I do. I love that idea. And I actually had some samples not that long ago done just simply with Spoonflower because I wanted to see what a certain image looked like on a textured woven grass cloth. And I loved it.
Okay.
So really, it's just like with my fabric, it's setting up that business of wallpaper in the same way, figuring out costs, figuring out manufacturing, shipping, all of that. I mean, it's not that complex. And I just, because I've been busy with the fabric and the other design work I do, I just never follow through. But I agree with you 100%. So maybe that's a goal for 2023.
Because I'm sure I could find a client of mine who would want one of your patterns.
Okay. Motivation.
I mean, because, you know, as you know, wallpaper's having a moment. Now, I don't know how long this moment will last, but, you know, it used to be in my realm, the type of work that I do, we rarely specified wallpaper.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's so much of it. It's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
I'm doing a project now where we're going to be using this Swedish wallpaper here and there. And Dawn, you know,
okay,
I'm sure,
Katie.
You know, right?
All right.
And
I'm
also
telling
the
you.
Colors, your colors are just fantastic.
Thank you.
And I think they work obviously so well in the coastal environment. And the type of projects I'm doing are often, mm-hmm. you know, New England
coastal.
If they're not directly on the water, they're
right.
They're in Rhode Island, which is everything about it's pretty coastal.
It's true.
Or the Cape.
Well, I love that idea. So let me get on that.
So I'm wondering if I had other notes on here. I feel like we've covered. You know, kind of
we've covered a lot. I just started out with the legal thing because I think anyone who's considering being an entrepreneur, an independent contractor, really needs to consider what's involved.
Right.
And it's something I didn't do when I was 22.
Well, also, architects, we all have professional liability insurance.
Yes.
You know,
okay.
We carry
that. Helps.
Yeah, we carry that anyway.
Okay.
You'd have to have that.
That's why it doesn't really help you to be an LLC.
That's probably what it is, because we have we have the professional
You're
liability anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So I left that out. Sorry. Important detail.
And
that is just based on your, you know, previous year's billing, you know, and it doesn't break the bank. And it's not a big deal.
Okay.
So, yeah, I highly recommend other architects, artists, designers who love the thought of autonomy and having their own vision for their own practice.
And don't be scared. It's really not as complex as a lot of these like online sites that I was looking at this morning make it sound.
Yeah. Well, and you made the point, Dawn, that when you were hiring out people when you were in the city, you know, obviously it upped your bottom line, right?
It did.
And I do know the obvious way for people who are real, you know, obvious business head people, the obvious way to increase revenue is to have staff and mark them up. And so obviously I think that's why people do it, right? And so some people say, but you're one person, you can only bill so much, but there's so much more to it to me than, the bottom line, you know, the amount of hours billed and thus the amount of money coming in because there's the personal satisfaction from
it's
all these things we just mentioned.
Destiny, the projects, kind of projects you take on.
And so it also, you can over time, hopefully, theoretically, in my line of work,
charge more.
Projects that are better and better, you know, better and better suited to you. So it doesn't mean you're getting bigger in terms of staff. You're getting better gigs, and that's the fulfillment. And if you're billing out the same number of hours, of course you can always change your hourly rate, but it's like the same pot of money. So anyway, we're clearly not business people,
right? But I will say this: when I did have those two or three independent contractors working with me in the city, like you were saying before, they were actually friends.
Yep.
And incredibly talented artists.
Yes.
And it was an absolute pleasure to work with them.
Right.
I mean, we laughed all day, every day.
Nice.
And it was just, it made a difference in all of our bottom lines.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable. It
doesn't
always work out that way, but it did in my case. So, you know, everyone's different. You got to find your own path.
Exactly.
That suits you.
Yes. And don't give up, because I got to say, you know, for my field, it's so grueling in the beginning. It's just, they really beat down people entering the field.
Really?
By the process. You know, it's just so, it's so easy to get pigeonholed in a firm doing something repetitive.
Oh.
And there's nothing more boring for people like you or I than like the repetitive task, you know?
So
I think that probably weeds a fair amount of people out. They're like, oh, geez, you know. So just like be persistent. I guess that would be my advice. Be persistent. Don't let someone just pigeonhole you into doing this one little annoying task. You know, seek out something that's going to help you grow, learn, so you get to where you want to be. And don't get confined by other people's vision for you, you know.
Oh, that's perfect. Great advice. You could teach.
All right. So I feel like that's a wrap on Soul Practitioner Talk for Shop Talk.
Yeah, so as you usual, all go for it.
Yeah, as usual, folks, you know, if you're listening, if you know someone else who might enjoy the podcast, please share it. We would love reviews on, you know, whatever you listen to for your podcast. I'm thinking Apple Podcasts or what have you. It helps us get new listeners. The more reviews or comments that you have, hopefully that are positive.
And send comments and questions about this one. This podcast, if you have questions about becoming an entrepreneur.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, so if you go to our website, designmehouse.com, that's where you find all of our contact info. And oh, we're going to need some kind of visual representation for this talk. Normally, that's where we put the this episode. That's where we put the visuals. You know, what we talked about is not terribly visual. So
maybe pictures of our studios.
I could think of, or like pictures of the artwork. You know, we'll figure out some.
Yeah.
This is not a very visual episode. But we'll come up with something, and we'll stick. You know, we don't really need links for anything that we really talked about today, I don't think.
Normally
the website is full of links.
So
today was a pretty straightforward one. And I hope folks,
I think it was a good idea to share our business experience and our creative experience. We've been doing it a long time, and there's a lot of young designers out there just beginning and trying to figure out what to do. So
excellent.
Helpful. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you, Dawn.
Have a great weekend.
See you later. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.